Well, I want to welcome you and offer you a good morning, and I'm glad you're here today and excited about all of the great conversations that have been happening already this week, and I'm hopeful for the conversations that will continue. My name is Shane Hughes. We're looking at Empowering the Introverts. If you're listening online and you'd like a copy of our slides, you can give me an email. Send me an email at shane@campbellchurch.org, and I'd be happy to give you the slides so you can follow along. But I'm just curious, show of hands, I want to ask you to talk, unless you really want to. How many of you are here because you kind of, you self-identify or some test has told you, I'm an introvert, and the rest of you, how many of you are here because you have this strong desire to understand your spouse, because some of their behavior is a mystery to you? This class kind of germinated. The idea came from an experience that we had at our church, and it's called Art Night. And I want to tell you a little bit more about Art Night in a little bit. But basically, it was this moment in the life of our community where all of our introverts suddenly said yes. And they all came together, and they created this kind of beautiful moment in our church community, in the life of our church. And it was pretty exciting. I think probably the litmus test for an introvert is to look at this picture for a moment and ask yourself, would I really like to be in here? This is either a nightmare or it's heaven. And it's usually one or the other. This kind of isolated, wide open space. There's nothing else to bother you. It's just you and your books and maybe a dog. And that's all it is. If that sounds like heaven, if that sounds like a place like when you're exhausted from ministry work, when you're exhausted from your life, to go there, then you might be an introvert. I want to look at a couple of books. We'll just do a little book review of kind of what useful resources are. Quiet by Susan Cain is by far kind of the biggest, most useful book on introversion. She cites a lot of sources. It's very useful. Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman is also very useful. That's a little more technical. And he touches the kind of the neuroscience of what's going on. And then two more that are specifically oriented towards churches is Quiet Faith by Edwards. That is good. And then, Introverts in the Church by Adam McHugh, which is excellent. If you're going to read one of these and you want to think about the spirituality of introverts, then Introverts in the Church is your best bet. And I've got a copy up here if you want to take a look at it after the experience, then I'd be happy to let you take a look at it. So let's start with kind of a best definition of introversion, because I think it's an idea that's often misunderstood. Let's define it negatively first. It's not that I don't like people or parties. That's not what introversion is. It's also not shyness or reserved or quiet. In fact, that may be even the opposite of what introversion is. At a party, an introvert might find himself or herself sitting on the wall. A person that is shy might find themselves sitting right next to them. But the reason that they are there are very different. The shy person is there because they want to be involved in the party, but they're afraid. The introvert doesn't want to interact. They're just waiting until they can go home. My favorite t-shirt that I saw for introverts, you can find this online, buy it. It says, sorry I'm late, I didn't want to come. which often is what I would love to wear everywhere. It's not fear of public speaking or social anxiety. That's not what defines an introvert. Public speaking is a very common fear, especially in the U.S. That's not what introversion is. So those are kind of what it isn't. Let's talk about what it is for a minute. It's also not self-absorption or a melancholic personality. Being an introvert doesn't necessarily mean that you're habitually depressed. It doesn't mean that you're narcissistic and just kind of only interested in your own inner world. What it is introverts can be friendly. They can be talkative and funny. I think the best definition is to turn inward on oneself, which is that an introvert is fascinated by the internal workings of their own spirit, of their own soul, and of their own mind. And that is a place for them that is a resource, as opposed to a place for them that is a source of fear or anxiety. And so the introvert will want to turn in on itself. Different sources cite different percentages of the population of introversion extroversion scale, and some sources say 30% of the population is introversion. Myers-Briggs, when they did move their test online, they found a lot of fascinating data. They found that 50% of the population tests as introverted, but it could be that people that are interested in Myers-Briggs tend to be introverted. So there might be a kind of a false positive there. But the other thing we need to be realized is that introversion is not a toggle switch. This isn't a binary thing. It's more like a spectrum, scale of 1 to 10, and you might be a 5, or you might be a 10, or you might be a 1. And so even there, I'm going to try to avoid stereotypical ideas about introversion, extroversion. But there are some commonalities that we see in these behaviors. There's some commonalities of the way that introverts versus extroverts think and behave in social interaction. And so if we hit some stereotypes and you think, well, I'm an introvert and that's not true for me, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a spectrum and not everybody hits in the same place at the same time. Does that make sense? Okay. So I think the best way to think about introversion is probably best defined by three factors, and this is what I want to kind of use as a framework for thinking through today. The first is energy source. The question that probably is not so much do you like parties or do you like to talk to large groups, but where do you recharge your batteries? So my wife is she calls herself a small group extrovert, and we'll go to church and we're both exhausted when we leave, but she'll go to like a dinner party and she just loves it. She's talking to everyone. She's having an amazing time. And then I'm sitting there tolerating, and we get in the car and my wife drives us home because I'm exhausted. And she, on the other hand, is just chatting the whole way home. Isn't this amazing? Isn't this wonderful? I'm fighting, trying to not fall asleep, because that's taxing for me. But for me, getting alone with a book and finding a quiet place and reading, or just being by myself, is what really jazzes me up. I come away from those experiences, going on a long run, something like that. I come away from those experiences, and then I'm ready to engage. She goes on those experiences. If they last too long, then my wife might get a little melancholy. It might be harder for her to connect. So one way to understand what defines kind of a factor of understanding introversion is energy source. The next one is internal processing. To the extrovert, an unengaged introvert is simply not busy. And so if you've ever seen someone in their office and they're just kind of staring off into space, you may think, well, clearly they're not doing anything, so I can bother them, right? But for an introvert, that is, they're unaware of the internal action that's happening. An introvert, that internal processing is incredibly important. In fact, it's probably the most vital part of their day. And what's happening inside of their head is maybe more important than actually what happens outside of their head. Introverts tend to treat ideas like friends. And in the same way that you would go to visit a friend, you'd have lunch with a friend, you'd have a conversation. An introvert will treat an idea like a friend and revisit and go back. The inward discovery and self-discovery is incredibly rewarding for an introvert, which is probably why the Myers-Briggs may test a little positive towards introverts, because they want to explore kind of their own inward working. You know, the Enneagram is kind of, there's a session later today about it. That's kind of the new in vogue thing in the Churches of Christ. But that's one of those kind of self-discovery, self-examining ideas where you kind of take time to look at yourself. And when you discover something new, it's really exciting. And you want to explore that even further. So the internal processing is one kind of key factor in introversion. And the last is depth over breadth. Introverts tend to have fewer friends. They also tend to have fewer hobbies. Even the hobbies that they do by themselves, they tend to have less. They tend to go more detailed and become more of an expert in things on the other hand, they tend to abhor the breadth, the wide distance. They abhor small talk, networking. While they can do it, it's just exhausting. A conference like this for an introvert is wonderful, but it's hard. It's something that drains that battery. It's something that wears them out. They tend towards higher concentration and longer concentration. And they tend more towards meaningful rather than flippant conversation. So these kind of three ideas are kind of the three ways that we want to, the factors that we look at to define introversion. There's been a lot of research on what causes introversion. The first idea is that nobody really knows. This is one piece of the science that it's really tough to discern because it's not clear if it's social, if it's psychosocial, if it's behavioral, brain chemistry. Nobody really knows what causes this, but it's clear that populations all over the world tend to break themselves down into this spectrum. One idea is brain chemistry. It could be that dopamine and serotonin receptors in the brain function fundamentally different for introverts and extroverts, whereas an extrovert, when they encounter someone else and they have that conversation or that large experience of a large party, that kicks their brain chemistry in a different way than introverts do. An introvert, when they're quiet, when there's wide open space, when it's a smaller experience, when it's a meaningful one-on-one conversation, that may kick their dopamine receptors and serotonin in a different way. So it could be fundamentally our brains work differently. There's been a lot of research that tries to support that idea. It's not conclusive by any means. It could be that there's environmental perception differences. And this is basically what it means. If you were to put an introvert in a room like this, they would be overwhelmed, from my perspective, they'd be well overwhelmed by all of the details of all of the faces of all of the people. And they will tend to notice the facial expressions of individuals. They tend to notice, is somebody paying attention to me, is somebody not? They tend to notice all of those things in exquisite detail. And so a big room where you're tending to notice those things is absolutely exhausting because you're kind of overwhelmed by the sensory input. An extrovert, on the other hand, tends to not notice those changes as quickly. They've actually done brain studies with EKGs and looked at how the wave in the brain works, and introverts feel that self-identify as highly introvert. Actually, their brain spikes earlier to sudden change and sudden stimuli. But an extrovert is much more likely to process that information faster and make a decision quicker. So even though an introvert notices a change in their environment much quicker, they're slower to react to the change. There's a part of their brain that stops and says, now wait a minute, is what I'm about to do the right thing to do? Should I think twice about this? And what we're talking about here is a matter of milliseconds. But it's research that scholars have done. And so the extrovert is more likely to react and to be more confident in their gut reaction. An introvert is more likely to notice stimuli, might become overwhelmed very quickly, and then but slower to decide what to do with that information. I think you'll see this a lot, especially in boardroom settings or large group meetings where there's discussion going on, particularly if that, as it is in most churches, that discussion might become contentious or heated or it might, you know, there's something at stake there. An extrovert who's quick on their feet will quickly think of the right thing to say or a quip or something clever or a joke. And that's one of their gifts. That's one of their skills. An introvert might be overwhelmed by the speed of the conversation, and they just shut down. That's not to say they're not thinking. They're actually, there's a lot going on in their head. It's just that they're not ready to talk yet. And so as ministers and as church leaders and even as business leaders, there are processes that you can put in place in your meetings that actually help you to allow introverts the time and space to come up with an idea. If you've ever been in a meeting where you've led it and there's a lot of great ideas and a lot of great stuff and you're so excited because you've set a course and then 15 minutes later someone comes up to you and says, oh, Shane, I got a real problem with what we chose. I just don't think this is the right idea. Or they come up to you and say, oh man, that was amazing. I think we ought to do this as well. And your reaction might be like, that was great. Why didn't you say it when everyone was here? Why didn't you tell the group? Because that's a wonderful point. The reality is they may not have been able to. That their brain is working, not slower, but it's asking itself the question, is this really the right course of action? It's going to self-correct. Or it may have just been overwhelmed and flooded by the speed of the conversation, and they just couldn't do it. So it could be brain chemistry. It could be stimulation and how they perceive their environment. Or it could be blood flow patterns in the brain. There's a fascinating bit of research in Quiet that talks about this, that the brains of introverts and extroverts, blood flows differently and it flows better, and that may just change. But blood flow patterns in the brain may also be a response to how the brain uses. The brain tends to kind of dig channels in itself. Repetitive behaviors become very quick and easy That's why we don't have to think about what we do with our hands, because we've been using our hands since we've been very little. Those brain pathways are very well defined, and so of course those get more blood. So it could be cause and effect, and that's the third option probably isn't the reality. What I want us to do today is kind of look at three truths about introversion, especially in your ministry at your church, and how to help your introverts in their experience of Christian community, also their experience in the life of your church. The first is that we live in a culture that affirms extroversion skills and gifts much more readily than introversion skills and gifts. We live in a culture that, especially in the business world, that if you're fast and if you're loud and if you're charismatic and if you're very personal, you're going to get ahead. If you're certain about choices, then you're going to get ahead. In the Introverts in the Church book, he tells us a fascinating story about Wall Street, and that the more risky you are to take a chance on something, the more willing you are to put yourself out there, the more likely you are to be rewarded in Wall Street, especially before the big market crash, right? And so those people got promoted, those people set the culture of their firms, and there wasn't a lot of voices saying, well, hey, wait a minute, maybe we should think twice about this choice before we make it. Then comes the big market crash in, 2008, and all of a sudden those introverts that said, well, maybe this much risk isn't a good idea, are suddenly heard. And so I think we live in a culture that affirms, even in our churches, we live in a culture that affirms the gifts of extroverts more readily than the gifts of introverts. Because we love that Bible school teacher in the adult education program that can just gather a group together. And we love it when they can, you know, tell a joke and a smile and connect to somebody and make them feel welcome. We love it when we want to put them in touch with our new members so that we can pull them in and lock them in and connect them with other people. That's a great gift, and that's a great skill for an extrovert. And I think that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think our culture as a whole probably affirms those gifts more than they affirm the quiet gifts. And I think that's just the reality that we have to live with. Jim Collins in Good to Great, he notices that CEOs on the whole who don't pause for reflection also don't question their own assumptions. And so what they think to be true, they believe to be true, and what they believe to be true is how they act. And that's risky. That's not always the best kind of leadership. And he cites this, I can't recall the name of it. It's a CEO that was in charge of a razor blade company. And you think, you know, razor blades is not really a great, huge, booming industry right now. But that man over 20 years took his company from virtually unknown to the market leader. And it's just because he was an introvert. He was constantly reassessing his own assumptions. He was constantly reassessing his company's assumptions. And he didn't make a mistake because he was always thinking twice. The second truth that I want us to affirm is we probably don't tap into the power of introverts adequately, and they usually don't meet their own potential. And I think this is part of the struggle if you are introverted in your nature, is that you're probably not living up to your own full potential. That it's very easy for introverts, especially if you just, man, I love to research and I love to dig into the facts and I love to go very deep and I love to just find all the details and the nuance and I love to just contemplate all this. And in fact, I'm going to go to the coffee shop and contemplate it right now. And then I'm going to go home and I'm going to find a YouTube video that talks about this in the same way. And you've spent the whole day ignoring everything around you. There's a problem when you go too deep and you lose connection to the community around you. There's potential that you have that you probably aren't living in. There's also that kind of notion of, well, I've just got to charge my battery, and charging my battery means I got to be alone, and being alone means that I don't have to talk to you, and my introversion is a shield that I use to actually convey the gospel and to convey the truth and love of Christ to one another, because it might wear me out. And I've got a finite battery when I wake up in the morning, and if I'm depleted by the end of the night, that's no good. So I'm going to save it, and I'm going to avoid conversation. So I think a lot of times we don't tap into the power of introverts adequately. We don't know how to use them in our communities very well. But part of that is because introverts often don't push themselves and put themselves out there where there might be risk and, frankly, the calling of God. The third truth that we're going to look at today is that introverts just might be willing to answer the flippant, might be the answer to the flippant and shallow telling of the gospel. Now, and I want to be very careful and loving as I say this, but I also want to push hard against evangelical Christian culture. Evangelical Christian culture has created a mindset of evangelism and a mindset of what does it mean to share the gospel that is frankly, it's an inch thin and a mile wide. And in our effort to equip, to train people how to do sharing their faith and talking about Jesus with others, we've tried to boil that down to the bare minimum. It's so simple as I was in New York and I was working with a bunch of college students and we were doing a church plant and we didn't even have, we had three members. And so we did a lot of just kind of street ministry because in New York, that's where people are. They're always on the street. They're going to the subway. They're going to get food. And so we just needed a presence in our neighborhood. And so we set up a booth and we had these college students and we were working with them and they'd come from an evangelical tradition that taught them how to convert people. And it basically went to, they had this notepad and they would draw a cliff on one side and a cliff on the other side. And they'd say, you're here and God is here. And that's a problem because you're separated from God. The problem that separates you is sin. And but look, there's this wonderful thing that happened. Jesus came. He made a bridge. The bridge is the cross. How many of you have heard that before? And do you believe what I've just said? The person says yes, and they say yes, go live for Jesus. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching these college students do this. And these college students are amazing people. They are incredible, and we had so much fun. And they were their faith was rich, and their faith was deep. They knew Scripture. But that was what they'd been trained to do, to share the gospel with other people. And I'm just watching them do this saying, there's got to be something else here. There's got to be something more. And I think as we move into a more post-Christian environment, if you live in California, we're already there. You know what I'm talking about. If you're visiting from the Midwest or the South, it's coming. It's probably already there. Just go to your baseball field on Sunday morning and see how many families are finding community playing Little League with their kids than they are in church. But I believe that introversion and the deep reflective nature of what does it mean to follow Christ may be the answer to the flippant kind of evangelism that we've been experiencing, especially in evangelical circles and the churches of Christ for the last 10 or 15 years. Because I think it'd be very easy to take that little diagram of the two cliffs and the cross in between and replace it with the five fingers of salvation or that scripture hunt that begins in Acts 2 and frankly ends in Acts 2 and then and the go live for Jesus really people deserve better. God deserves better. There is a depth of the riches of the presence of Christ that deserves more reflection than a pithy answer and a shallow response. I want to introduce you Jeff Keel. Jeff and I are kind of on the same topic. I don't want to go any more into evangelism because that's his total experience. And yours is on Friday at
9:30.
And Jeff's going to dig very deep, very introverted experience. He's going to go very... he's not going to be shallow like my experience. And but I think if we were able to somehow listen to introverts in our community, somehow listen to that, maybe we wouldn't sound in our prayers and our sermons what Paul calls that kind of banging cymbals and blaring gongs. Maybe we could find more meaning. And I think, honestly, our culture and our society is full of YouTube videos with flashy images. It's full of Facebook shares of articles with clickbait titles and two paragraphs. I think the church can offer something different. And so he's going to go down that path a little differently on Friday. And I strongly encourage you to check his out. It'd be much better than mine. All right, so let's talk for a minute about how to empower the introverts. What are the practical things that you can do in your church community to help introverts not only feel like they belong, I feel like they have a presence, but also how to thrive. Introverts are often artists, poets, and deep thinkers. I told you kind of the start, the seed of this class was an experience at our church called Art Night. And basically the story was there was a young woman at our church who, she was an author. She was working with kids, teaching English. And she came and she said, you know, I love church. I love this community. Campbell is an amazing place. But I kind of want to do this project. I want to allow all of our artists to come together and allow us to kind of just share what we do together. And she said, who do I have to talk to get this happen? And I said, you don't need to talk to anybody. You do whatever you want. And how can we help you do this? And so she began to organize some other young adults and some people. And it's amazing to me how quickly this art night idea just took off. And at first they were thinking like, you know, maybe visual art and sculpture. But then some folks came along and said, well, I write music. Can I be a part? And so they included this kind of instrumental piece to it. And then somebody else said, well, I write poetry. Can I read some of my poetry? And yes. And so it was amazing how many people in our church community suddenly had a place to express themselves. And so we have chairs in an auditorium. We took out all the chairs and we kind of made it into an art gallery where people could come and you could talk about your piece. You could look at everybody else's piece. By the third year, we even had this culinary art piece where like all the snacks were really pretty, which they tasted good, which was nice. But it was amazing to me the cross section of our church that was there. It's not you know you can tell somebody when they're an artist because maybe it's the way they dress or they wear some provocative eyeglasses, you know, they're cool. We had construction workers there that could paint like you wouldn't believe. We had old women there that wrote poetry that was deep and meaningful. We had children there that just you know, their stuff was in crayon, but you could see like there is the seeds of something there. And so the point isn't so much that you should do art night at your church. The point is that you need to find a way to tap into the poets and the artists and the deep thinkers in your community. You know, whatever your context is going to be different. And so whatever that looks like for you. And if you're a preacher and you're part of a worship team, you know, try to ask those questions. How can we include art into our Sunday morning service? You know, the Church of Christ is a very intellectual, highly thought-driven experience. But not everybody in the Church of Christ is wired that way. And if you're really good at that kind of analytical thinking and digging into Scripture and doing that kind of gift, you feel like you have a place because you have something to say in Bible classes. You have something to say in the assembly. But if you're bent in an introverted way towards poetry, then it may feel like I don't belong. And so part of your job as a leader is to find ways and places to allow everyone to share their gifts for the good of the community. Number two. Offer options during forced interactions. If you're an introvert, you know what the worst time of the service is, right? What's the worst time of the service?
Greeting time.
Greeting time. Oh, it's awful. Because not only, like, you can slip in the back 3 minutes late, you can sit by yourself, and you can slip out 2 minutes early, and you're gold, right? You can get out of the parking lot before anyone knows you're there. Except for that moment when the worship leader says, please stand and greet your neighbor next to you and tell them a little about yourself. And I mean, it's like, for me sometimes, it would be the same as if our worship leader said, please take off your shoes and socks and touch toes with the person next to you. I don't want to do that. It's not that I don't like them. It's not that I don't want to be friendly. But that kind of interaction is not always positive for me. And so I love what our worship minister started doing. We put some coffee in our atrium, our welcome center. And he always has this brilliant little statement. He's like, if you want to get up, stand, greet your neighbor. If you're new, we want you to know we're really glad you're here. We'd love to, you know, learn your name. So, and then he would say, or if you want to go get coffee, there's some in the welcome center. And there is a very consistent pattern of who immediately gets up and goes and gets coffee and hangs out in there for 3 minutes until they hear the song starting, and then they come back. So offer options and make those options explicit in your worship service. One of the things that I do in preaching is I sometimes will ask a question to gig the audience mind in a certain direction. Right, and the best way to really make that happen is called think, pair, share, which is you think about the question, you pair with somebody, you tell them your answer, they tell you their answer, think, pair, share. And then as a group, if somebody wants to share it, you know, shout out their answer, they can shout it out, or sometimes we do that, sometimes we not. I make a rule every time I do this process at my church. I say, if you'd like to do this, go think and turn to the person next to you. If you don't know them, introduce yourself, and then answer the question. And then I say, or if you turn to the person next to you and they pulled out their phone and they're just flipping through their phone, it means they don't want to play. Right? And if you see someone do that, you just turn to the other person on the other side of you and talk to them instead. So what you do is you give somebody an option. If they don't want to, because a deep thinker, and if we're asking the right question that's emotionally probative, that's asking them to reflect on their experience, that is an incredibly intimate moment in a church community. And if you're comfortable with a flippant answer, if you're comfortable with kind of a, I'm going to go an inch deep on this and that's all I need to do, that's easy. But if your gut is to go very deep and very personal, that's not the right setting for you to share that with someone else. Because that other person, one, they don't know what to do with it. You know, your deep, darkest, most, you know, personal longing being laid to them. And they're like, oh, that's great. I like cheese. So allow people the ability for options in your service that require forced interaction. Number three is listen. The most powerful thing you can do to an introvert is a one-on-one conversation where you allow them to speak and you don't do anything but listen. An introvert will have a rewarding experience from that, especially as church leaders. Be aware of your introverts when they want to talk to you one-on-one, because it means they have something to say. It means that they have something that's important to them. And they've probably thought about it, and they probably asked the question, do I really want to spend the energy of going up to the preacher or the elder or the church leader and tell them about it? And then they've asked themselves the question, am I sure I want to do that? And so if they've gotten through all those three gates with enough courage or willing to expend the energy to come and talk to you, then realize this probably matters. This is probably important. So the first number three is listen. And to that end, one of the ways you can empower your introvert is to allow them to do things that are behind the scenes that allow them to use their strengths. I'm a big fan in church of not really focusing too hard on all the problems that we have, but rather let's leverage our strengths to do what God is calling us to do. If we focus on our problems all the time, that's all we see. But if we start using our strengths to follow God, maybe what we'll see is God in our work in the kingdom. And so in preparation for this very class, I asked a woman in my church, who's actually here in the room, which is weird. I said, I need some help and I don't know what to do. Can you find for me the resources I need to do this class? And so we had that conversation, and then about a week or so later, we came back and she said, here's the five books that you need. Here's the things that you need to do. She was able to use her gifts and strengths to do the research, to dig deep, when I didn't have as much time as I wanted to pay attention to it, and she was able to do that for me. And so that's an incredible strength that you can find in an introvert. And so leverage their strengths through listening, develop behind-the-scenes roles. Number four, communicate an email rather than brainstorming sessions if you want introverts to talk. Like we mentioned, that kind of boardroom setting where everybody's shooting out ideas, that is just completely overwhelming. They're creative, they're deep thinkers, they're thought-provoking ideas, but they're not going to share it in that kind of environment where you've got a whiteboard and you're just shooting out answers and say, next, 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 next. If you communicate via email, even if it's kind of a long list, that allows them the time and space to process. It allows them a non-energy expending way to kind of say, here's my idea. Here's one thing you could do. And then create space in class settings for reflection before response. And what I mean by that is in our adult Bible classes, even in our high school Bible classes, you can ask a question that you're trying to stimulate a discussion. And usually what happens is that like 7 seconds of awkwardness before someone's anxiety just builds to the level that they can't handle it anymore. And they say, I think it's Jesus. And you're like, yes, it's Jesus. Let's move on to my next point. Which is really poor classroom management, right? You want to ask the question that actually allows them to reflect and think. But the extrovert, who notices stimuli more slowly, they tend to narrow in and focus in on one thing. They're not going to notice the whole picture. They're going to focus on one thing. And they're going to make the quick decision of what the right answer is. They're going to feel confident enough to say that. They're going to speak first. And then the conversation is taken off. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you allow some time and space before the first person can answer, then you're allowing time for that introvert to process, to ask the question, is this really right? Am I willing to answer this? Okay, I think I am. I'll share a response. So allow space in class settings for reflection before response. And you have to create that space. One way you can do it is just by doubling up your rhetoric. You ask the question, and then you talk about the question without answering the question yourself, and then you ask the question again. And that allows, like, you're just talking the whole time, but you allow 5-10 seconds for an introvert to kind of think about their response. The other is you do a thing like a pairing group or writing that answer down on your phone or some other way to kind of allow them the space and time to reflect on that question. Does that make sense? Okay. Good. I'm doing great then. Number five, and again, I think this is what Jeff is really going to nail. We've got to redefine evangelism. That is the most important thing that an introvert is going to offer to our church community, is finding ways in which their story, their deep reflection, their thoughtful response to God's grace and love in their life can shape and change the world around them. The world is not going to change by clever arguments and logic. The world is going to change by the story of Christ being lived out in the lives of believers. There is no other way that story is going to be told in a postmodern context. And one of the things we know about postmodern context that we hear over and over and over is best story wins. The best narrative wins. And so if you have a shallow narrative, if you have pithy answers, it's not going to, that you're not doing Christ the service that he deserves. You're not plumbing the wealth that God has offered us through Scripture and through our own experience and through theological reflection. We must redefine evangelism in a way that introverts are going to be able to embrace that. And I'm thrilled that Jeff has all the answers for that. Number six, develop fletching leadership. Acknowledge it where you see it. You may have not heard that term anymore. If I ever write a book, this is going to be the title, Fletching Leadership, because I think I'm the first person to think about it. The fletches on an arrow are those little bird feathers at the back of an arrow. And I took archery when I was in Boy Scouts, when I was a kid, and was never any good at it. But there was one experience. We were up at camp, and we were at the archery range, and we were shooting, and we were using these old, you know, ratty bows. It was just what, you know, had been at the camp for the last 20 years, these old fiberglass bows. And we were just shooting arrows at the targets, trying to hit something. And I had pulled an arrow that didn't have any of the feathers, any of the fletching on the back, and I fired it. Guess what happened? It's a wonky arrow, right? It flies like this, hits the ground well before the target, because those feathers help to focus the trajectory and the aim of the arrow. Now, most of us, our gut is in leadership, that if you were talking about an arrow as a metaphor of leadership, you would say the leader is the tip, right? The leader is the arrowhead, and that's the thing that's going to penetrate. They're going to lead the way. They're going to show us how it's done. They're going to go first. And that is an aspect of leadership. But I'm convinced that there is another aspect of leadership that leads from behind. It's the quiet leader in the back that helps keep us from getting our direction all wonky, that helps clarify our vision, that helps reflect on the power of what we're doing and why it matters. And so we need to develop fletching leadership in our churches. My guess is it's already there. My guess is it's happening. It's just completely unacknowledged because we as Americans tend to look for the brave, charismatic leader that's forging ahead. That's kind of our meta-narrative story, more than the person in the back that's helping us really guide and hone in our ideas. So fletching leadership keeps us straight and keeps it accurate. And last, recognize leadership from example and leadership from commitment to cause. There are lots of different ways that leaders function in our communities, and I want to focus on those two ideas because I think this is probably the two ways that introverts have the best, most to offer in our church communities. The first is Mother Teresa, who was not a clever marketer of her work. And she didn't seek to capture the world's attention through what she was doing in Calcutta. She never, ever spoke to a reporter because she was trying to promote the work that she and her sisters were doing. But she was an example of what it means to be Christ. She chose to serve the least of these in the poorest place in the poorest country in the world at the time. And because she chose to do that, because of her commitment to her example, she attracted the world's attention. She attracted millions of people that saw her story and chose to live a life of service in addition to her. She was an introvert, probably an extreme introvert, if you read her biography. She also struggled with great doubts. She was a deep thinker. She struggled through most of her faith. It wasn't easy for Mother Teresa. The second is Martin Luther King Jr., who showed his leadership through commitment to cause. It's fascinating if you read the biographies on Martin Luther King Jr. because his seminary professors didn't really think he would become that much of a preacher because he wasn't very charismatic. And in the classes that he attended, he was more often than not saying anything at all. He would go through entire courses and never utter a word. He would sit, he would listen. You could tell something was going on, but he never really talked about it. And even as he began his work in civil rights, he remained that very introverted self and that very introverted perspective. But his commitment to the cause, his willingness because he had thought deeply about his cause and he was solely 100% committed to what he was doing, attracted followers from all over the U.S. So one of the ways to recognize introverted leadership is to introverts who lead through example and through their commitment to their cause. And it's not hard to tell those stories in your church community. It's not hard to see those people. The people that are doing the work quietly, they're not making a big fanfare about what they're doing. They're not trying to blow their own horn about what's going on in their ministry. But every week, week after week, year after year, they're doing it, and it's amazing. In our church context, we partner with City Team, and this is the most unrecognized, below-the-radar ministry in our entire church, but it is one of the most powerful. They take men that are struggling with addiction and are in the process of recovery. They take them to Death Valley. Some of them have never been outside of cities in their entire lives. They take them some other places for these kind of retreats. And you would never know the guys that are involved in that because they never really want to blow their own horn. But their example is powerful to our church community. You've seen those people in your church that are suffering. They're suffering through doubt. They're suffering through hard experiences in life. They're suffering through loss. Yet they remain committed to their faith and committed to the church community. Those are people that are showing examples of that kind of fletching leadership. They're leading from behind. They're not the front of the spear. They're not flashy, but they are doing something powerful in your church community. And part of what we can do is recognize that so that others may follow that. So those are kind of the seven ways that I see of how to really empower your introverts in your church community. I want to talk for a minute, because we just have just a minute left, of the care and feeding of introverted ministers. Because there's a very good chance that your preaching minister is an introvert. I heard just Monday that somebody said 70% of all preaching pastors are introverts. I don't know if that's true or not. It doesn't surprise me. But here's the job description of a minister. That's just me kind of throwing out the ideas that are loaded from introverts in the church. A minister is a very social job. It's a very job focused on leadership, but it's also a job that you have to do a lot of in-depth thinking because you want to do a good sermon on Sunday that changes people's mind. But at the same time, you've got to do some counseling work. You've got to do some pastoral care to people who are in crisis. At the same time, you have a wedding to perform. At the same time, you need to organize a bunch of volunteers, train them, and equip them to teach classes. So it's a very wide job. And a lot of ministers are introverted. So I want to give you three ideas to help out your introverted minister. If you can avoid small talk on Sundays, do it. They want to greet visitors. They want to talk to people that are hurting. They want to make a connection with the people that they need to make a connection to. And when you go up and just like, hey, how's the weather? I love how the Giants are doing awful. Blah, blah, blah. That's draining their battery, right? And it's also taking time that they might be able to use to greet that visitor, to talk to them, and expend the energy where they really need it. That's not to say that you don't matter to them. That's not to say that you're not important to them. That is to say, if it's just small talk, if you just want to shake their hand, just shake their hand and then move on. Don't avoid small talk if you can help it. Second, schedule interruptions. If you want to just drop by and say hello, call first. Let me tell you why. Because you might see your perspective is that if I just drop by, I just have one quick question. I just want to tell them one quick story. This is a cool thing that happened. It's only going to take 15 minutes. No big deal. I'm going to come by at 10:15 in the morning. I'm going to do that. It'll be no problem. The minister has gotten there at 8. They've gotten their coffee. They really get down to start studying about 8:30. And they're going to go until lunch. And they're going to dive deep because they're an introvert. They like the deep theological research. And you come in at 10 o'clock and you take 15 minutes of their time. You didn't take 15 minutes. You took 2.5 hours. Because now, after you leave, they've got to get back in gear again. And so they want to talk to you. They want you to come in, and they want to minister to you. They want to interact with you. They love that. But schedule it so that you can avoid the interruption. And like I said, paradox from the pulpit, 70% of ministers are introvert. Part of the reason we think that's true is that pulpit preaching is fundamentally different in a phenomenon than a party. It's one-way communication. It's very directed. And so it doesn't cost an introvert the same thing. And last but not least, let's do introvert self-management. First of all, there is nothing wrong with you. Our culture tells introverts that there's, you really ought to be an extrovert. If you really want to get promoted, if you really want to succeed, you need to be a little more aggressive. You need to be a little more charismatic. There is nothing wrong with you. God created you just the way you are. And you are wonderfully made. Secondly, you belong in the body of Christ. You know, in 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about the body and hands and feet and eyes and ears and all those pieces. God made you to be a part of the body of Christ, which means that he gave you your gifts and your disposition to be a part of this community. So if you are an introvert, there is nothing wrong with you. But you need to figure out, if you're a hand, how am I going to be the best hand I can be? If I'm a nose, how am I going to be the best nose that I can be, which includes your introversion? Last thing I want to suggest to you, just as a real practical thing, is schedule 2 vacations. And this just comes out of practical experience. I just went with my family to my mom's house, and we spent about 5 or 6 days there, had a great time. I came home, and I was so irritable. I just got back from vacation. Why am I so... My wife is just like... She's going nuts with me. You know, I don't know what's wrong. I should be refreshed and full because I had this wonderful experience. And she said, Shane, just go see a movie. Just get out of the house. Go for a run. Go away. Schedule 2 vacations when you're going to go on vacation. Schedule your vacation to have a good time, and then schedule that break. You need to engage in self-management and self-care because of just the way that you are. We have like no time. So if you have a question or a comment, we can do one and then we're out. So you've had all the whole time to reflect. And I'm just kidding. Thank you for coming. I hope you have a great day.